I'm Richard Lannan, rhymes with Cannon, and this is the Glazing Insider Industry Podcast. This episode is brought to you by Nozzle. The Nozzle team captures photos, videos and drone footage from locations across the UK to create content for your social media and case studies for your website. To find out more about Nozzle's pay-as-you-go and monthly packages, visit nozzle.media. Welcome to the podcast dedicated to the people of the glazing industry. In this episode, I talk with Dave Jackson from Icotherm. In this conversation, Dave talks us through his fenestration journey all the way from how it started to the position he's in today. So, without further ado, let's get started. Dave, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you for coming on.
Pleasure.
How did you get into the fenestration world?
Oh, my God. The humble beginnings.
Yeah.
The humble beginnings, believe it or not, was textiles
right, prior
to the crazy window and conservatory industry. Looking back on that period, I was actually, you know, selling performance products business to business to repeat purchase people. So I look back on it and think it was a good grounding actually getting into this, although completely different product groups. And that would have been 21 years ago.
Right.
I was working that out earlier on this morning. So yeah, 21 years of window conservatory industry. That's the background.
So what company did you start at then all those years ago?
The first company I took a position or a role with was a powder-coated aluminium roof system called Quantel, which is still around today, you know, and I think anyone who knows that product, it was a bit of a Bentley Rolls-Royce type product, and what a grounding that was. I thought at the time I was going to sell it for fun, and that was my quick introduction to the industry, where it wasn't just about appearance, it was more about pricing and how easy it is to fit. And I think that was my first rapid education. Always been in roofing. Roof's always been my bag in the game, not so much windows and glass, but always been with the roof systems companies.
And how did you get to that company first then? Did you sort of from school was...
No, it was... textiles was a struggle. As you'd imagine, as an industry, we were going through that period where people, you know, the production was going offshore back in my day, Morocco, Far East, et cetera, et cetera. And I had a family member in a sales and marketing organization that they threw me as a wild card, is the truth of it.
Right.
I went on an interview with a sales and marketing exec who said, "We've got absolutely nothing for you in textiles. Wait a minute, we'll throw you in as a wild card at this one," and that was the Quantel job. So yeah, it was completely different. As I said at the time, I didn't know what I was getting into or in for. The brilliant man that brought me into that, I'll mention him, anyone who knows him, a guy called Tony Marshall. The day when he shook my hand and gave me the job, said, "Welcome to the filthiest industry in the world." Maybe you won't be able to use that. Anyone that's in this industry, I didn't know what it meant at the time, but by God, it didn't take me long to find out. You'd probably be editing all that.
No, I don't know. I quite like that.
but that was it. You know, I was in, and then it was the learning curve. I think back in the day then for me, I'm that type of character that I need to know everything. Somebody said to me on my induction week, "You're involved in an industry now where the people that we're trying to sell to know better than we do." And it's the truth. You know, they're the people that work with the product and work on site with the product. So I took it upon myself at the time to put myself through the factory, the fabrication. Once I had a couple of weeks with that, we went out and I went and did the installs. This was the Epwin Group at the time.
Right.
Who had all these different types of businesses covering different things in the industry. So the opportunity was there to do that. But I think it's a technical sales product. I think when you're with roofing, it's a technical world that we're in, and you do have to become not just a salesperson, but a technical salesperson to survive in that, you know, and that was the beginning. Where did it lead from there? I know you're going to ask me next.
Exactly right.
It was, it was such a difficult, they were the happy days. I thought Quantel was a wonderful place to be and a wonderful team of people down in Devon, spending a lot of time travelling from the north down to Devon, you know, certainly every other week at the time. But it, as a salesperson, it wasn't doing what I wanted it to do. And I'd met my now wife, Jenny, co-owner of Icatherm, and we wanted to do things in life. So we decided we were going to set up our own retail business, which was Ike Conservatories Limited, which is this business. Not long after we'd made that decision, without notifying Quantile, I took a call from Kevin Harvey and Nick Dutton at Sinseal, come and have a coffee. And it messed my head up, is the truth of it.
I can imagine.
You know, it was, everybody knew what Global was doing at the time. It was the new kid on the block, the roof that everybody was talking about. And I had this situation. Was it me that couldn't sell anymore, or was I trying to sell, not the wrong product, but a more difficult, complex, high-value technical product? So I went along and had that coffee, and without boring you the ins and outs of it, the next stop was Global, Sinseal.
Right.
You know, and that was the real grounding. That was welcome to the real world. You know, great, great. Wouldn't change it for the world. You know, the Dutton family have left their legacy in this industry. I think you'll find Nick still leaving his legacy.
Still going. Yeah.
Yeah.
Still going.
But that was the growing up period for me. That was learning how to be in the industry. So, yeah, I wouldn't change that for the world. And I think that period probably, if you look at the successes we're having here today, that was the grounding for it, because it opened you up to so many doorways in the industry that we're still knocking on and tapping into. Not to mention the fact that they were putting the white plastic Connies on that we're now changing.
Yeah.
So I can't, you know, I can't thank that background enough, really. You know, they provided the future for me.
Yeah.
In whatever was going on at that point. You know, the numbers were bonkers. I think we peaked at 757 prefabricated roof kits in a week.
Wow.
You know, dizzy, you know. I think at the minute, I think our next goal is 60. We're up there in the 50-60 bracket at the moment, and trying to adjust to the numbers like hell. So bring it on.
Fantastic. So what did you join as then? What was your role at Global?
Sales manager, sales representative. Yeah, it's in a team of, there was only actually two people on roofing. Obviously, Sinseal was a window extruder, yeah, profile business. And I think the roof system itself was a carrot dangling exercise to find more window business, the truth of it. But there was north and south. Even with Quantel in the previous, everything north of Birmingham, my existence in the marketplace was Birmingham, Scotland, into Northern Ireland a little bit, and that was my world.
Wow.
Everywhere else you needed a passport to get to. But it's
so he's covering some miles then?
You find out, yeah. I've done more miles in a Mondeo than most, believe me. You don't know what a Mondeo is, do you?
I do, yeah, definitely.
I think it was... people never got that back in the day. I think we were doing 50,000 miles a year plus in company cars, and that wasn't the job. That was just getting there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was great, though. Wouldn't change it for the world.
You couldn't have done it in an electric car, could you?
No. Don't. We're still looking at them. We just put the points in, have you noticed?
I saw the point, yeah.
No one's got an electric car, but we have power here now. That was... but still, you know, I think that period, I've always had this thing, what if... doing it yourself. You know, we almost did the retail business, and Jenny was in textiles when we met, my wife and business partner, was so disappointed when I went and had the coffee. And it was like, what are you doing? You know, we'd gone so far as producing business cards, company name, everything was set up to go and step out of Quantel. And I went to Sinseal, and Jenny left her job, and she was the one that made the break. So it kind of flipped everything on its head, and we had that period, I guess, where Eye Conservatories was a lovely little lifestyle business where I was in the industry. If we did half a dozen jobs a year, we went on holiday. You know, and I think there's plenty of people doing that back in the day. It was in-store, so friends, family, people that know you. You know, it's... But it was a good introduction to understanding everything, really. You know, I was fitting jobs at the weekends and the usual, If you want to get somewhere, you're going to make it happen, haven't you?
Yeah.
Where do we go from there? You know, I think my time was run with Sin Seal in terms of I was running out of energy. I was getting to an age where there was nothing left in the tank. It coincided with the family, the Dutton family, selling out. Good luck to them, you know. And then the management buyout. You know, I'd already made my mind up at that particular point. I had other business interests that were on the go by then. We got involved with glass coating. That was another attempt at trying to find pavements paved with gold. It didn't work out, but I had a year away from Sin Seal trying to find a different way. I think everybody in this industry tries to get out, you know. I don't know if anyone's told you that, Richard, but yeah. Everybody has an attempt to get out and everybody ends up coming back screaming. And I think I lasted almost a year, and K2 at the time, where everyone calls me Jacko, come and have a chat. And I was financially, it wasn't working out. And again, that was the next stop, back in roofing again. Another, the third roof system, which was K2. Yeah. So yeah, Mr. Roofman here. Another great stop. You know, some wonderful people in this industry, the Fielding, Sally mainly. Gary had gone upstairs doing his own energy stuff, but another 2.5 year stop back on roofing again until Sin Seal came back and bought it. So maybe that was me out of the frying pan and in at the fire. I don't know, but it was certainly time to move on again. And I think that was probably the key period of what's going on today for me, because the business partner I had was also one of Sin Seal's top three global fabricators. Wow. So there was an opportunity to go back there and back into roofing again. And at the time, I don't think we mentioned in competitor names, but I'd already signed up with one of the aluminium space frame roofs. Don't want to give them any press coverage with you here, so I'll keep that one of the two.
Fair enough.
One of the three now. It won't take you long to guess, but that was my first exposure to these warmer roof type products. Strange, the first one I looked at, I didn't like, you know, for all the wrong reasons. I didn't like it because I thought the tiles looked very commercial and poorly jointed. But that period for us was bonkers. This was November 2012. I was having to commute down south to Somerset. Sunday night, early Monday morning, I was doing half the week down there, half the week back up in the north. The one thing I did realise in that first January was that, it's funny because I've just reiterated this, we had 48 inquiries for a warm roof replacement and we sold 3.
Wow.
And it was trying to grasp why we had so much interest but such poor results, really. And that was the beginning of where we are today. The trigger for it, I mean, it's a great story, this. I use it in the factory visits up here, was I had an office down there that had a global roof on it with glass in it. And it was impossible. This is a man that spent his life out on the road driving a Mondeo, as I said. Suddenly I'm having to do quite some time in an office with a glass roof on it. I couldn't function. And I said to my then business partner stroke boss in this particular setup, can I put one of those aluminium solid roofs on my office? To which his response was, no, they're too expensive. You know, we're trying to manufacture and sell these on into the trade, and we thought they were too expensive. So anyway, I had a solid roof on it. He said, go and build it out of timber. That was the humble beginnings. To which I said, you miserly sod, and went off. And we built one of these aluminium roofs with 6x2 joists on it. It was bonkers, you know. And I remember sitting, it was February by now, and we had a glorious day, blue skies, and there must have been a team of 5 of us in this car park looking at a hybrid shell of a roof, like a scene out of Blackadder. It's a hybrid roof. And that was the turning point, Richard. We stood there and went, my God, why would you put an aluminium ridge in it? Why would you put any aluminium in it? It's so typical of our industry, isn't it? You know, we come up with these most bonkers ideas. The only reason that people were doing metal roofs is they were trying to do something with a conservatory. You know, and the Irish boys at the time, you know, Ireland was a different marketplace for conservatories. Most of them were doing sunrooms. Or, sorry, 50% of them would just go straight to sunrooms. So I think that period around 2009, when the then depression was hitting in, the Irish boys were coming over the pond to try and find an extended marketplace, and that was what was going on at that period. But yeah, what a turning point for us, because, you know, it became obvious at that point timber was that's the building material that it should be. You know, it's taken us years, even into last year, when we crawled out of caves. You know, it didn't take as long as the human race to realise that roofs should be built out of timber. I've had it pitched back at me from sales teams that have taken our products, and, you know, everything in the world is moving on. Your car has got anti-locking brake systems, you've got climate control, you've got this, you've got that. You know, we've gone through my age, TVs had buttons on them when I was growing up. Then we had VHS, Betamax, CD-ROMs. We've now got smart tellies. Phones have been big, they've been small, they've been big again. Everything's moving on. Yet, predominantly 99.99999 times out of 100, you build roofs out of timber. You pass any building site in the UK, what do they build a roof out of?
Yeah, it's timber. Timber. That's a good point.
You open the hatch in your loft, you have a look in it. What's your roof made out of? Timber. So that's been our journey. You know, we bought into that philosophy. The thing moved on quite rapidly. We came up with methods of fabricating the roof in a factory that took installed time out on site. And here we are now. My God, it must be on about version 100 of a timber roof. But, you know, I think my own personal journey with the old hat on and ultimately setting up High Conservatories Limited as a manufacturing business, or converting it to a manufacturing business and trading as Icotherm, I think we're somewhere in excess of 14,000 roofs as Icotherm now. Wow. So it's certainly a good decision, we think, anyway. You know, and I think the timber philosophy and story rolls on. You know, you only have to look at the growth that this company's experiencing. Maybe the industry at the time was looking at that crazy little timber company that ventilates its roof. But things are going on, as you may or may not be aware, Richard, with, you know, the building control is becoming more stringent. There's a health and safety aspect creeping in on the aftermath of events like Grenfell.
Yeah.
But everything we've done on this journey has not been a gamble. We don't do anything unless the powers that be say it's correct and right. You know, we've always tried to produce something that's right and proper, and we know the roof performs. We work with BRE behind the scenes, which we think should become a must. You know, I don't know how anyone can operate without there being standards. So hopefully those things will change. You know, as time goes on, we're actually embracing the more stringent guidelines that are coming. We welcome them, is the truth of it. You know, where do we go from here?
That's good. Oh, well, I was just going to say, I think you're right, yeah, with the regulations, because going back to my selling days, I was up against sometimes people that they have permitted development. There was no one checking that conservatory. No one. And it would go up to the top, you know, unless they had some. And then the roofing, you know, the solid roofs come along, and then they think most councils, our experience was, we've never seen anything like this before. What do we do? And now they've started sort of catching up. Yeah.
I think one of the things I did when we first, or I got first got involved in it, 2013 was a back into the education bit for me again. And I rang Mendip Building Control up and said, this is an unusual inquiry. You know, I've now come in running a business here. I think we had 40 odd staff at the time, and saying, look, I just want to do it right. Will you come and see us? You know, and I think certainly for me at the time, it was that building control were like a swear word. It was like everyone's trying to avoid them, find a loophole. And we just thought the best way is to tackle it head on. At the time, we had metal roofs in the factory. We thought we needed to get an LABC registration at the time. So we invited a gentleman in who, first of all, saw the metal roof. I'm not going to mention the name again because they're not worthy of it. And he just reared up like a cat, saying, you'll never get an LABC registration with that. Which is, really funny because that one already has it. And then we took them in the back and showed them, you know, the early stages of our timber roof production, which was welcomed, you know, much more appealing to a building inspector. So, you know, and that again, you know, I've lost my way a little bit with it, but it's that was another sign that we were making the right decisions to go that route. By August, that's where I was going with it. By August, we were in meetings with this building inspector, and that's when changes were coming. Still remember the dates, August the 30th. They had a new technical review that was basically saying, every time you do one of these roof upgrades, it really should have a building certificate. But the period that you're referring to, Richard, is then you ring 10 different building offices, and half of them are going, "We like them, get on with it." And the other half are going, "Yep, you're going to have a building certificate," and was becoming really problematic. I still think that this should make it black and white. You know, you can't have a non-equal playing field, but it's still muddied to this day. I think what is happening with it is, I think up until June the 15th, last year, 22, everyone was sitting on the side of the fence that we're still working with conservatories, which are exempt structures or exempt but temporary. Whereas I think the change is if you delve into document L and part A now, if you're sad enough to read through it, ream and a half or whatever, there's paragraphs in it now that that state if you improve the thermal performance of the roof, you need a building certificate. That tells me it's an extension now. Mm. You know, if you put a heating system in, even an electric heating system now, it's an extension. People aren't understanding these things. And I think the industry will always sit on the side of the fence of the easiest or the path of least resistance, won't it?
Yeah.
I think as time goes on, maybe there's going to be an expectation of companies like this or systems companies, you know, such as ourselves, to educate. And I think that's the way it's going. It's all going to be type approval. I think if a homeowner knew the legal aspects of encouraging or allowing an illegal build to happen on their properties, they might have a different outlook on what they're actually doing. You know, if you get Bill and Ben even to come and put an Icotherm roof on, maybe convince them to, you know, pay cash or whatever goes on in this industry. If you have an illegal build, you're not insured. You know, and if you're not insured, you have a fire who's going to pay out, or God forbid, even worse, getting back to the Grenfell type, you know, seriousness of health and safety. Somebody's going to be responsible for maiming or killing somebody down the line. And I think that's what they're trying to close down. And I think Icotherm moving forward, we want to embrace that. If a company like this can be used as a vehicle to educate and provide that knowledge, that's what we see our responsibility in the industry. You know, we're affiliated with people like MFA at the moment. It's probably the one we've enjoyed working the most with at the moment in terms of inspectors. But they're very knowledgeable, but also they're not a faceless organisation. They're there to help and advise and develop us also. So then that's been a positive development in the last 18 months that we've been working with also.
You make a very good point. I never thought about insurance. All the years I've been dealing with customers and talking about listed building consent, and I was like, look, you can't put your PVC in here, something like that. You know,
I sit in 4-hour long meetings. Some of them have been around this desk that we're sat around now, and I go into them with dread because I'm not the best person at attention, solicitors' meetings, and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, because I'm so embroiled in this. You know, some of the stuff I'm picking up at the minute, you're thinking, my God, I didn't know that. You know, even away from the building inspectors, we have our own structural engineer today. We expected June the 15th to be a tougher test to the industry. We were very disappointed when they didn't bring in things like wind loading, wind uplift and stuff. I really thought that would come in. But one of the things having your own in-house engineer is it opens your eyes to all of the pitfalls, ourselves included, where we're happy to sell a roof to somebody and not really care what they're doing with it. You know, and we've had situations with flat roofs. Orangeries are becoming very popular again. at the moment. And nobody in this industry, myself included, up until 18 months ago, cared what these structures were being fastened back to. You know, if somebody comes on and says, can you make this dimension a roof? We go, yeah. And we ship it out and they go and fit it. Suddenly you have an engineer looking at that structure going, where's it fastening back to the house? You know, and it opens up your eyes. You've got dead points but now being fastened to bungalows and houses and stuff, and nobody's actually looking at the situation of the existing property. Mm-hmm. So it's how a business like this harnesses that information. I think we shot ourselves in the foot a little bit by announcing to the industry we've got an engineer, because everybody wanted to tap into that without paying for it. We nearly gave our engineer OSDL a nervous breakdown. But we've kind of sat back now and realised, look, you know, I think that the journey of the window and conservatory businesses is changing. We're not window fitters anymore, you know, and I think these companies are either going to have to start having access to architects. They're probably going to have to start dealing with SAP calcs, which they probably already are doing at the moment, because it's already evolving into that, taking the thermal barrier out. But what we're actually saying to them now is, look, we have an engineer. If you want to ask that difficult question, we can provide the answers. The bit that became a little bit dangerous for us is we were trying to provide the answers that which were putting cost and complication to a job and realising we could be costing ourselves a roof sale here. Mm. So it's a difficult message to package and deliver back to the industry, but I think we've found a happy medium at the minute. You know, we're dealing with same clients over and over again, even though we're probably bringing in on more new business than we've ever done at the moment. The ratios on new business, but I think once people start to understand what we're about, it's an easy thing to get your head around. If you don't want our engineers' input, don't ask for it. I just say no. You know, it's not a. We've also had that. There's plenty of businesses out there have got access to their own technical, but it's nice for the majority to know that we've got a professional eye glancing over stuff should they need it. We don't put any roofs out at a guess or a gamble. You know, it all comes with an approval from an engineer.
I'm just thinking, maybe put his number on a paid line.
It's the bit that nearly killed our engineer was we said we'll pay your royalties, and I still like the idea on paper, but unfortunately the whole industry jumped at him and he couldn't deal with it. It was easy for us passing on the info, but you know, we have a good relationship at the minute. It's bedded down, and I think the future certainly of a business like this, I think most of us now are realizing that we're modular building companies. We're not conservatories anymore. You know, what does the future hold for a modular building company? Everybody's done the garden room stint. You know, I think we always felt it was single story extension next. We don't see anything different at the minute. I think the next 5 to 10 years will tell with that. But my God, where does it stop? The opportunity. I'm convinced in 5 years' time, a roof will just be something that this business does. Such is the scope of where we can go with it. So watch this space. Yeah, maybe we'll be talking about it again. Maybe I'll have hung up my boots. That'd be a better idea, but that's something else.
The question that's in my head now is, so did the original installation business, did that morph into this?
No, the private side of it, Jenny and my wife, Jenny, kids came along at our ripe old age. I know I left it late, but the business that it was just got shelved. You know, it was a lovely little business because we're proper people. We didn't owe anybody any money. We didn't dissolve it. We didn't sting anybody. It just went into hibernation. The only person that I Conservatories Limited owed at that particular time was Jenny, because kids came along and she stopped paying herself. We even carried on paying the accountants to put the books through and stuff. So the reason we hijacked it was when the original launch of these timber roofs for the Sinseal fabricator ended with the inevitable industry fallout or not seeing eye to eye or whatever goes on in the industry. And I said, right, we're going to do this. We're going to have a pop at it and see where we go. I've been being honest with you at the time. I had a one-year-old and a four-year-old. I was only interested in feeding the kids and supporting the family. I don't think you could have envisaged where we were going to be at today with it. So we went to the bank and said, this is a big deal for us. You know, we've never done anything quite on this scale before. Selling a few conservatories is one thing. Taking on premises and five-year lets and investment in kit and stuff. And the bank manager at the time said, look, you've got this business that we can give you an unsecured overdraft on. And if you set it up as a new start business, you're going to have to go through credit check. And it just seemed like the obvious thing to do was bring it out of hibernation and continue. The first 5 months of setting up was terrifying.
I can imagine.
But we never even put an overdraft in. I think 5 months in, we became frighteningly close to not being able to pay anybody. I thought it was going to be credit card time. And then suddenly some money came in. I still remember the figures now. A load of people paid us. 48 grand came in 2 days before payday. I think we had five staff. I said, Jenny, pay everybody. And that was the turning point. From that was kind of like the cash flow stress. And from that point, we turned the corner. So we're just those kind of people. I don't know if we're old school, it's the way our parents brought us up or whatever, but we bought a machine, we pay for it. We've never done anything on the drip. We just keep battling through. I think the accountants think we're a little bit mad now and maybe we have to become a little bit smarter in business, but we've always been a business that likes to be in control of things. And, you know, I don't know what the future holds for that. We've got a big investment thing going on at the moment. But, we've never been a company that borrows, really. We just keep going with it, and I think things are changing. You know, maybe down the line, who knows? Acquisitions or something might be the next thing on the agenda. But at the minute, we're still trying to deal with the week ahead. The numbers are going bonkers. You know, at the moment, last year was the biggest year we've had. Pandemic fueled. You come into this year, you think, oh, what would be reasonable? 20% growth. It's unprecedented, Richard, what we're doing. We had just over 100% growth in February, year on February. Our financial year, November to October, end of March, I think we're 75% growth up on last year. So we're in. Something's happening with this business and its positioning in the industry at the minute. I joked about it earlier, but maybe that little timber company that ventilates it has got something that perhaps was correct and proper in the first place. That's how it's feeling at the moment. So long may it continue. Touch wood, if you pardon the pun.
So when I'm sort of going back to when you decided to go for this.
It would have been, oh God, I stepped out of the old setup with too many differences.
Did you have a break at that point? Just a couple or was it quickly straight back into?
I was employed. I had 10 days holiday left and I had, as I said, it wasn't a particularly happy time in life because I had a lot of things going on, two young kids, and to step out and take a risk like that when I'm already into my 40s was daunting. But I took my 10 days holiday and decided I couldn't carry on. It was making me ill. And all we actually did with Icotherm was carry on the same journey. You know, the part of the falling out was going off on a tangent where I had my beliefs of what a roof should be. You know, and this roof is still following that same path. You know, as I said, version 100, but it's still the same from the first blank piece of paper. My past not changed or faltered. We've always stuck to our beliefs and gone with beliefs correct and proper for the marketplace.
So when you came up sort of explaining the concept, did you get any pushback?
You're joking. From who?
Potential customers, should we say. You start showing it about.
The first place I went with a timber roof, he works for us now. He was a customer back in the day. Somebody I've dealt with many, many, many. Phil, you're listening somewhere. And I went out with this hodgepodge timber mocked up sample. And I said, Phil, I've got something really, really good for you to see. And I went and pitched it to him in a showroom in North Wales. His first comment, he looked at it and went, I can't do that. It's got to be metal. I'm still reminding him to this day. And do you know, Richard, he's the only person that I ever went to that had that reaction. And I still pull him about it now. I said, why? And he said, it's just because I didn't know. You know, yeah. He said, when I'd left him that day, he said, why does it have to be metal? I don't know, but it's been the most well-received. I honestly never, ever had any trouble. And I think because of our journey, I think we started the business with a borrowed saw from another Sinseal fabricator, me and a pal. He's not with us now, there's no fallout, but the commuting was killing him, and he's gone off and done other things. But, you know, we've always been on that journey, you could argue. We always had just too many roofs to build, whether it was 3 roofs, 6 roofs, 10 roofs, 30 roofs, even now, 50, 60 roofs. We're always in growing pains. Sales reps would come and see us and have a coffee and then go and pitch themselves in front of someone going, hey, we bumped into Jacko, what's he doing? And I'd get a call saying, why have you not been to Seals? And honestly, it'd be like, we were just fighting roofs off. It was ridiculous. I'm not coming to see you because I'm having a nervous breakdown making roofs, mate. And you'll probably want 30 days credit and I can't give it you because I've got no money. So it's been the kindest journey in the sense that people were coming after us. We've always constantly been filling the factory. The only things that have held us back in 8.5 years of being Icatherm is we ceilinged out. We started in a 5,500 square foot unit in Bolton. We actually got 31 roofs in one week onto backs of vans out of that space.
Wow.
We couldn't grow anymore, but we couldn't find a unit to move into. We didn't have the confidence financially to take 20, 30, 40,000 square foot units. And we probably stayed there 18 months, 2 years longer than we should have done, unable to grow. Then we bought this building. You know, I, in my naivety, thought we'd get 50 to 60 units out of this one. We peaked at 45. We couldn't move. Not coming from a manufacturing background, I didn't understand the importance of storing prefabricated product. This is a bulky product. And managing waste, you know, and here we are today. We've got 3 sites, 40,000 square feet over 3 sites. Now, it's not ideal. We're trying to find the correct building still. Funnily enough, we're going to go and view one in the next week that's we know is going to become available in 6 months. So maybe we can bring it all under one roof. That would be the dream. Forgotten what the original question was, Richard. What? Keep doing that.
No, I like that. It's... It was about the startup, wasn't it? How it started. Like, what did you get? Any pushback?
With numbers. I mean, pushbacks. No, the pushbacks from product, never. So, yeah, of course you do. It's selling you do, though. You know, whether you're selling a global roof, a K2 roof, or anything else, you'll always get people that have been sold well. And it's not just about product. You know, we're just winning over businesses now that invested heavily with vans and marketing, and you know, good sales organizations will sell the sizzle. It's what they keep saying, isn't it? They don't particularly care whether they've got the best products in the world. Hasn't the biggest provider? Oh, it's a good dig. This one hasn't the biggest provider into conservatory market. You're not going to get shot for this, but. Are their products the best, or are they just over-engineered and overpriced? Not me that's saying that. You got me on camera. Isn't that what the marketplace says? You know, but well marketed, and you know, that's probably where the kickback's been. Where we approach businesses. I know you're leading me in here to loads of juicy stuff because we arrived with this timber roof when the two main metal aluminium roof systems were installing nationwide. And I think there's an old school still exists in what we do that come from joinery and timber background. So suddenly little old Icatherm's turning up with a timber roof, which some of them found interesting because they wouldn't touch a metal roof for the problems that we know that it potentially can bring. And secondly, we were providing something that was different. You know, we're not a retail company. You know, we park that. We've got enough problems making roofs, never mind installing them. So, yeah, there was a lot of appeal. to this type of customer that we want at the time. You know, a time serve, family business, showroom. We were giving them good products that worked on time. And they were happy marketing their own businesses. So we didn't really have all of that bump. We had a real honeymoon period where we were finding an easy, brilliant customer base to have. I still maintain to this day, if you're sticking drawing pins on a map of the UK, they were the people that we would want in the first place. And we got them because we gave them something that was different. We stayed away. We backed winning horses. It's been a great, you know, and they were doing well with our products. So they had the organic growth period where perhaps they were doing one every 2 weeks and suddenly they were doing two, three a week with us. So again, we were growing through our network without having to do the mileage in the Mondeo anymore.
Mm.
Yeah, great. We're still getting resistance now. You know, there's a marketplace out there now that's bought into the aluminium, and I think everybody can see the benefits of what we do, but it's very, very difficult to get off the rails that they're already on.
Mm.
Personally, I touch wood and I hope it doesn't seem arrogant, but I still think it's a matter of time. I don't think the future is going to be metal roofs. I think anybody new that's crazy enough to get into what we do, I can't see them investing money into bringing out metal and foam products. I don't. Maybe there'll be more timber competition down the line. It's one that I love this, and my engineer keeps reminding me is, if you're going to design something today, it's like I always come back to the wheel. If I asked you what's the best shape to design a wheel, what are you going to tell me?
It's got to be round. You can't.
It's a circle.
Yeah.
Well, that's all we do. You know, we make roofs out of the correct thing to do it out of. And our industry's out there trying to convince people that 20-sided wheels, and it's nonsense. Absolute utter nonsense. So I think the fact that we've made the right decisions at an early stage, I think we'll do as well going forward. You'd be crazy to think that there's not going to be competition. But, you know, we've got enough miles under our belts now in terms of accreditation and development work and what have you, that, you know, maybe they've got to catch up to us now. We were always the company that was catching up.
Hmm.
You know, it's weird. Suddenly, we're feeling like we're certainly at the front of the queue with the timber and insulation developments, that's for sure.
What do you say when they say about weight?
I sat in a meeting in here last year. So we were seven, nearly 8 years in. And I get customers, as you do. This is more your world, this, Richard. And I get a WhatsApp at night going, some forum saying, anyone tried an Icotherm roof? And someone comes on, too heavy, steer clear. And I'm like, hey? So we're developing and we're all on, most of the main players in the industry on the same roofing software now, manufacturing software and what have you, and we finally got all of the weights in. We put contingencies in because we want to be safe. We're always a company that would err on the safe side, so we put a 10% waste uplift in. And some of the other companies that were already presenting their figures, we were like, we're lighter than them. We are lighter than them.
Wow.
So I sat in this meeting, right? I was probably where you were, actually, bored. And I'm looking about on my phone under the desk. And I said, I don't know where it came from, but I just suddenly had this idea to put in Google, cubic meter of aluminium, how much does it weigh? And I'm sat, yeah, and it came up with 5 grades of aluminium. And the lowest grade, the lightest grade of aluminium was 2,648 kilos or something. The next thing I keyed in was cubic meter of pine. Have a guess.
A lot less.
Have a wild guess.
I couldn't.
Step in the dark.
So,
2.6 something.
2.6
tons versus.
Was it two?
450 kilos. And the penny dropped in this meeting. It was like a revelation. It's back to that perception. Is the aluminium guys have done such a great job of selling it as a lightweight metal. Metal's miles heavier than timber, and nobody grasps that. You know, yeah.
It's just blown my mind a little bit.
It did me. I couldn't wait for the meeting to end so we could run around going, pine's lighter than alloy. But it was, you know, don't get me wrong, we use a big solid chunk in it, but our roofs are lighter than theirs when you read them through the software. So I don't know where it's come from. The weight issue for all of us, when you work with the engineers, you know, if you're looking at the weight per square metre, I think anyone who's getting over 60 kilos might have to start having a worry and start notifying people. But we're the actual carcasses themselves without tiles on them and plasterboard are coming in about 30 kilos in the engineer's report. You know, a double glazed unit conservatory roof, you're talking 24, 25 kilos a square metre just for the glass. Mm-hmm. So it's never been an issue. You know, we're certainly... certainly no heavier than the other systems that are out there. Yeah, it's a strange one. But the weight's certainly not against anybody else that's out there. I think they've done a good job of making our roof sound bulky and heavy when the reality of it is it's lighter than what they're promoting in the first place. We had a great one. I don't know if you can leave this one in. I'll end up getting a lawsuit. Because this particular provider was putting the weights on, we got wind of it because ours were coming in lighter. We nicked an account off them, and same Phil, who's working for us now, came back, and we had this P-shaped roof, and they had a weight on it, and they changed the wording, saying the roof is now a prox. It was 500 and something kilos, and because us being us, we put everything back true and proper, our roof was 940 kilos, and we're like, what the hell? We've always been lighter than them, and everything we'd looked at. Mm. Yet they're now wording it, the roof is approximately 520, whatever it was. So that roof came back to here, and I still remember it had three big Veluxes in it, and it had slate tiles on it or whatever, using the same tiles as we are. So Adam, our technical guy, took the weight of the Veluxes out and the weight of the tiles out of it, and it went minus 7 or 8 kilos, that roof. Ah. This is our industry. You know, we're portraying... If somebody's going to put our roof on top of a structure, we feel that we should be telling them the weight of that thing that's on the back of a vehicle. And I think what they were doing was actually saying the roof's approximately this. I think they were just giving the space frame, the aluminium frame weight, because you take the components out that we know, it was going negative. So again, how do you operate in this industry?
And sleep straight. At night.
And sleep straight, yeah. But... So, yeah, I don't know. Weight's not an issue. You know, we're putting programs in with the weight. The issues we're having with weight now is more about payloads on vehicles, not whether a consumer or a customer. A customer's going to have a problem with it. Product groups, you know, I think we got lucky. Timing was right. Receptive marketplace, front of the queue, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, we knew we had to bring more stuff out. And I think we've got the four main product groups now. We have the solid roof, Eika roof. We've got glass panels in the roof with the Zyka view. I'd mentioned the flat roof. Flat roof, we're doing more flat roofs than we've ever done at the minute. You know, it's a great, great product, quick to fit, performs. You know, just getting some great results back from BRE on that. It's the first time we put the flat roof through. So we've not gone public with that yet because it's still happening. But the stuff that's come back at the moment is wonderful. Because we're already reaching a better criteria than we thought we were. So, and we do the low pitch roof. So we've got four main product groups. But I think one of the things we're realising as a business now is our part in the industry. You know, I think when you start doing your own business, we'd have sold the shoes on our feet to keep going. And you know, I genuinely believe by now we might have been doing like 100 to 200 frames a week and doors and. It's not us. We're purely focused now on keeping that story going, and we're going to try and BRE test group. You know, it's the government backed testing lab. We believe it's the only way to go, and see where it leads us. You know, I genuinely believe at the moment we brought Tim Harris in as a consultant. We're a very knowledgeable industry guy. Described this business as full of half baked cakes. Made me feel about this big. But I think, you know, we're trying to do things in a different way now. I think we carried the business as far as we could, Jenny and I, is the truth of it. I read a fantastic thing on a recent break about Gymshark. You know Gymshark?
Yeah, yeah, no, yeah.
The youngest billionaire in the UK. It was a wonderful article, and the bit that stuck with me was he said his ambition has always been to be the least smart person in his boardroom. And I thought it was brilliant, because that's the problem we're having at the minute, is we need to surround ourselves by people that are smarter and cleverer than we are. And I think we've put quite a few things in place in the last 6 months. You know, new sales director, Neil Harbour, coming in. We brought the consultant in, Tim. We're bringing in a new factory manager come in. Key people that are really specialists in the fields that I never was, is the truth of it. I've sat in meetings, production meetings, once we've handed over the reins, thinking, my God, I don't know how the hell we got to 40-odd roofs without proper people in place. But some of it's refreshing to see. Common sense runs out in production.
Yeah.
And it's weird, you know, I've only ever been able to do anything that common sense tells me, but it doesn't work for manufacturing for some reason. There's a different way, and I don't know it.
Which is,
but I've got a man that does,
exactly,
so that's all that
exactly
matters.
Why you could admit that and be true.
Yeah, because, it's true. It's, yeah. Listen, I've been through periods with this where I could sleep for 1,000 years and I'm not waking up with any more answers, and it's frustrating. You know, you're thinking, my God, what? I don't know how to move the thing forward. That's been the stuff that's been holding back more than, you know, you're asking me, has anything held you back? These are the moments, really, when you just can't see a way forward, and somebody comes in with the answers and you're like, bloody hell, it's easy. But if you haven't got it, you know, in the DNA, then it's listen, I think that's the challenge now, is to keep building the team and putting proper people in place and, you know, see where we can take it. You know, I mentioned earlier, we couldn't have dreamt walking in a unit with a borrowed saw that we'd be at the level of turnover and, you know, and units that we're at the moment. Somebody asked me this morning on the way in, where do you think you can get with it? And I just think the way things are going at the minute, the bar keeps rising, you know. I had my own personal ambitions at the beginning. They're nowhere near the people that we're bringing in, you know. They're way beyond where I believed I could get it, so maybe I'll just keep my mouth shut and let them keep yeah, driving good. It. And I'll see where they get, shall I? Is that the plan?
That's good. Good plan. So do you work with your wife day to day?
Yes. That's the boss.
How's that going?
Jenny's the driving force behind this. Without a doubt. And I think it's...
You're talking about smart people.
She'll be peed off that I'm doing this podcast with you and it's not her, because there's always this expectation that... Because I'm the industry bod that Dave Jackson did it. I'm not. I'm a sales guy that drove around dreaming, is the truth of it. You know, and I probably would still be driving around dreaming now if Jenny didn't say, let's do it. You know, she's the real driving force about putting a business together and, by God, some of the crap that goes on behind the scenes. So, yeah. It is
important. It has to be done. And she's working on the
working
podcast.
Working with wife. Oh, my God. Everybody's warned me about it. You know, it's difficult. We're like passing ships in the night. You know, it's difficult, but yeah, we're in it together, and you know, it never stops. The problem having your own business, as you'll know, you know, we don't stop at 5 o'clock on a Friday.
No idea.
And then when you're living in the same house together, it never stops. You know, so I think, again, giving my old sob story here, but I think part of what I'd like to see over the next couple of years with the business, you know, by having smart people in, is maybe it does take a little bit of that stress away, because there's been times in the last 2 years where you think you're the only people that are carrying that burden, and maybe that's the challenge of growing the business. I don't know.
Well, it sounds like you're doing something right. And Jenny is welcome on the podcast anytime. So
she'll be doing the next one.
Yeah, that's
that,
it. We can
assure
even
you.
Up. Yeah, definitely.
Or Neil Harbour. Get me all
that's
back.
Too. We do.
Yeah, I'm sure Jenny would love to do it. You know, she's got her own. You know, the one thing that we do get, it's almost like two sides of the business. I'm always trapped at the front end of operational and design and future and that. Don't get me wrong, it is the exciting part of the business for me as well. I think when you're at the back end of the business trying to get money in and dealing with admin and accountancy, she drew the wrong straw.
Yeah, you need both, though.
Again, you know, Jenny's she's actually a designer by background. When I met her, she was a designer in a textile, Christie Towels, designing things like Wimbledon's towels and what have you. So,
oh, wow.
She is actually the creative one as well, but she's being suppressed at the minute and locked away in an office. But yeah, definitely. I think, you know, she'd love to get involved in the development and design side, and it'd be nice to get some more satisfaction out of the business. There's no doubt about it. Maybe make that my challenge to get her free from some of the monotony that admin can bring with it. I don't play that because I've all the admin people after me as well now. Hey, what about us?
Necessary evil.
Why are you having a pop at admin? Sorry, Adele.
On that note then, that's quite a journey.
Yes, and it is. I'm tired.
Yeah, I can imagine.
you put me through it again. Therapy. I'm going to need therapy just thinking about
just get
it again.
Through it. Well, it comes, this is the time of the podcast where I tend to ask three questions.
Right.
So the first one is... No, not at all. The first one is in the whole of your journey, is there a low point that sticks out for you?
Oh. No.
That's a good answer.
Let's hope there isn't.
No, that's it. That's it. Well, the flip side to that question is there a high point that sticks out?
All of it.
Still going.
Yeah, I don't. It's so. Where do you stop with it? You know, keep touching wood, don't I? Just telling you something. That wood, trust in wood. Zina, tell you, trust in timber. You don't touch aluminium, do you? Yeah, I think you have your ups and downs, and your low points, but that's all part of the journey. You know, there's low points getting up at 6:30 and still being here at 9 or coming in at weekends. But would you change any of that for anything? No, because that was a decision that we made. To have a go at it. And if you're not prepared to do that, then it wouldn't have been the right decision to do it in the first place. There's been plenty of highs, believe me. You know, in the early days, every other week was fizz at the local wine bar. Wish we'd go back to that. Mm. Doesn't seem to be time for that now. But there's tons of highs. You know, I think the wonderful thing for me is that we keep, you know, breaking the records, whether it's sales units, whether it's turnover, biggest months, biggest years. And at the moment, whilst you're on that journey, it's when maybe it's down the line. Maybe that's the challenge to keep the growth and maturity and extending it, new product groups. I'm really, really brimming glass more than half full about the future because, as I said, it's not just about roofing anymore. There's lots and lots of things that we want to do that maybe at the moment, whilst our new team and consultation is bringing the business up to speed, we'll be right back on that again, launching the new product groups and, you know, expansion. Who knows? Maybe future podcasts.
Fantastic. Good answer.
I don't think we've reached the high yet. But, and what's the third one?
Third one is...
You've forgotten it.
If you had to spend 2 weeks on a desert island with someone from within the fenestration industry, who would it be? And you've got a cop out as well because your wife is in the industry. So it's up to you. You can go down that route or you can pick someone else.
It would have to be my wife, wouldn't it?
I think you'd have to. You could say that, but if it had to be someone else, just as a different.
Oh my God. I mean, obviously my wife for the obvious reasons.
If you need to play it safe.
I better not pick any females because.
No, that's not good. I don't recommend that.
Listen, I admire the bits for me. Working in the industry, and I've mentioned some people with it, but you know the real legends of the industry is like your Gary Duttons and Nick coming through the ranks now. If you look at people when I started out, your Jim Rawson and what have you, these guys have been there and done it and got the T-shirt with it, haven't they? I think the last time I bumped into Gary Dutton was at the Fit Show and I said, please rub my arm and let some of that Midas touch rub off of me. Maybe it worked because things certainly looked up since then. But yeah, I go through this journey. I look at my past. And this is why perhaps it wouldn't because I want to spend a couple of weeks on a desert island with any of these people. Far from it. Before I get any ideas. But it's more about the experience, isn't it? Maybe round a table for a meal.
Yeah. That's fair enough.
I'm not speedos on a desert island with some of the characters like that. Doesn't do it for me. But I look back on my own career and I used to question things like, I got some great, great stuff said to me over the years and I bank it all. Gary used to walk down a corridor and have his head down. And I work with people that I worked with him for 25 years. And I go, what's up with the man? Old Bobby Parsons said to me one, he said, Gary's tried everything in his early days. He tried to be everybody's mate. I've tried to be everybody's mate. And he said, it just doesn't work. He said he went through a period where he wanted to fight everyone. I've been through that. And he said, the man that you're witnessing now, Dave, he said, he's just given up. But I know that emotion now.
Yeah.
I really do. And I look back and go, God, I know exactly what he's been through now. I'm going through it. So, yeah, it would have been interesting to actually get these people and find out beforehand, you're going to go through this, Dave.
Yeah.
Maybe I'd have had a faster journey. I don't know. But, yeah, the people that I respect, they're the people that have done it. Absolutely. It's a tough old game. Mm-hmm. It takes a lot. I've realised is you need a lot. You've got to work. A lot of people don't forget that these days in this modern social media era, and what a hard work and endeavour makes you luckier for some reason. But you've got to take a lot of risk, and I still think the biggest thing with it is timing and luck. You know, I've tried before historically, and I always felt in my career I was 20 years too late or at the back of the queue, which is why with these roofs, I just felt at the time when we did have a go at it, people would say to me, and I'll leave you on this one, but why did you never fabricate an aluminium roof? I'm talking about conservatory roofs now. Before all the warm roofs started, the truth of it was, I never believed in it. I was the rep doing this, but I never saw enough in it to think that that's going to be for me, kind of thing. Maybe that's not a good thing to be saying out there, but I've sold to most of them. You might have to edit that. But yeah, I just never had the confidence. But with this, I really could see that there was going to be something ahead in the marketplace. You know, whether we could harness it and come up with things was something else. But you could feel the demand and the change of the way the Conservatory Home Improvement sector was going was all in front of me about that stage back in 2014, 2015 we started it. Didn't answer the question on that. Yeah, the first Icatherm roof was produced in January 2015.
Right.
So we're eight and a bit, getting on for 8.5 years into it.
Wow.
No one person, I don't think. I'll go away. I'll wake up tonight and go, oh, I should have said. But no.
Stick with Jenny.
Stick with Jenny, yeah. Yeah. Make it easy. You can get home to Cheltenham now.
Dave,
we're done.
Thank you very much for your time today. Thank you for coming on.
I'll waffle on, the cows come home.
You're welcome back anytime. So maybe we'll catch up and find out the next part of the journey. But all the best.
Thank you. Pleasure.
Cheers.
I'll see you in a bit.
Thank you. That was a great conversation with Dave. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. If you'd like to hear more podcasts like this one, consider subscribing. Otherwise, thank you for listening. Until next time.